From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on June 28th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. On this episode of The Lead, we have a recap of the final actions of the 125th General Assembly. From the budget to the bills that were in conference committee. Some made it, like Judicial Merit Selection Commission reform, which everyone was waiting for. I know you guys were dying for it. To those that didn't, like the critical race theory bill, and more. We're also looking at who won and lost in the primary runoffs we were watching on Tuesday. The governor was in Europe, bonjour, this week talking with our biggest trading partner, and we have an update from SC Commerce Secretary Harry Lightsey. And of course, we have a small recap of the first presidential debate. Not a major one, that's for our national podcasting brothers and sisters in arms. And a programming note. Next week, we'll have two episodes dropping, but they will be a little bit more topical, a little bit more evergreen. One is my interview with SCDOT Secretary Justin Powell about the state of our infrastructure in our growing state. And the latest on the biggest project underway and what's on the horizon. Should be a good listen if you're traveling for the Independence Day holiday and if you're stuck in traffic somewhere. And the other episode's gonna be a taste of a new show. That's right. We're sharing the feed. Hopefully you like it. Let us know. You can do that by calling 803-563-7169. We want to know what you think about what's going on with The Lead. You know, we try not to get too political in the wind down. So I will say save your debate hot takes for your friends and family if you feel comfortable talking with your friends and family about politics. But you can call in and critique my golf game if you've ever seen it. It's up there. 803-563-7169. I know many of you are sick and tired of me talking. Well, I'm sorry. Just kidding. Don't listen if you don't like me. I like me.
We love you.
Now, I say all this to say that we have the Russ McKinney.
Oh, yeah.
Providing us with this wonderful recap of the legislative session, which finally ended on Wednesday.
Perfect timing.
When lawmakers passed the final version of the budget and the bills that made it through and the other ones that died. It happens. We're going to touch more on some of Russ's points, but here is a great summary of the two-year session.
The 125th regular session of the General Assembly ended this week. Next year's $13 billion-plus budget was adopted, with a heavy emphasis on new funding for education, roads, and bridges. Lawmakers failed to enact two major policy initiatives pushed by the governor and the Republican leadership, bills dealing with the state's energy future and the hoped-for consolidation of the state's health service agencies. In the final hour of the session, a bill reforming the process legislators use in electing most judges was approved. Several key bills backed by the conservative majority were enacted this session. Handguns can now be carried in public without a permit. Doctors are now barred from performing gender transition surgeries and overseeing hormone treatment for patients under 18. And the new state budget provides another cut in the state's personal income tax rate. Conservatives, however, were unsuccessful in an attempt to limit how topics like race can be taught in public schools. House Speaker Merle Smith said the omnibus bill aimed at ensuring the state's future energy needs will now have to be a priority for next year's legislature because of its importance to the state's rapid growing economy.
One of those components is energy and being able to have reliable, affordable energy. And I think that's recognized by everybody in this General Assembly. And I have no doubt when we commit ourselves to that, they'll eventually be reality and pass this General Assembly.
Smith also said the bill consolidating state health care agencies will remain at the top of lawmakers' to-do list. Election year politics played a major role in this year's session. In the House, tensions between the majority Republican caucus and the ultra-conservative group of Republicans known as the Freedom Caucus spilled into the Republican primaries. Two close allies of Speaker Smith, including veteran committee chair Bill Sandifer of Seneca, lost to Freedom Caucus candidates. In the Senate, the six-week abortion law passed by the General Assembly last year had a major impact on this month's primaries. the three Republican women senators who opposed tighter restrictions in the abortion law lost to primary opponents. Among them, Katrina Sheely of Lexington, who chairs the Senate's Family and Veterans Affairs Committee.
And I've read billboards that said I was a baby killer. I would never hurt a child. I have saved more children since I have been in the South Carolina legislature than probably anybody else I know.
Senate Republican leader Shane Massey said he didn't think last year's abortion votes were the sole cause of defeat for the GOP women, and added that he's disappointed there will be no women in next year's Republican caucus.
I've served in the body when we didn't have any women at all, not just Republican, but no Democratic women either. And I'll tell you, I think that we get different perspectives when you have people with different backgrounds in the body. So I think we're gonna miss that, no question.
While Democrats have been in the minority in the Senate for over 20 years, one Democratic senator has maintained immense influence in the body. Lexington's Nikki Setzler spent his final day in the chamber on Wednesday, concluding 48 years in office.
I absolutely love the South Carolina Senate, probably as much or more than anybody who has ever served in this body.
He's the longest-serving member of the Senate ever and currently longest-serving state legislator in the country. In farewell remarks, Setzler urged his colleagues to work for the people they represent and not for their political party.
Thank you, as always, Russ. And I want to briefly recap some of the major items in the state budget that were agreed to and passed by both chambers. It's now on the governor's desk.
Go ahead.
We saw an income tax reduction for the personal income tax from 6.4% to 6.2%. That was accelerated by 0.1%. There's also state aid to classrooms that went up, additional money for classrooms, good for our education folks, and starting teacher salaries bumped up to $47,000. And they also extended the teacher schedule out to 28 years. There's also plenty of money for state scholarships, $115 million for state tech schools improvements and capital investment, and capital investment for the veterans' nursing homes in the state. There's also a pay raise for state employees. It is $1,125 for all employees who are making less than $50,000, and those making above that get a 2.25% raise. There's money for the Department of Corrections, Department of Juvenile Justice, Department of Social Services, etc., as well as money for DOT, talking about an extra $200 million for bridge repair and $200 million for county transportation committees. Now, what are those CTCs? Those are the folks that you need to talk to if you want your street paved. If you have potholes, contact your CTC. They just got extra money, and they're going to want to spend it. There's also $117 million for rural road safety. The budget also fully funds, the capital investment for the Clemson Veterinary School and the University of South Carolina School of Medicine. It has to be even. I know my parents out there understand that. That's how budgeting works, folks. There was also $430 million worth of local pet projects and projects for nonprofits, money for nonprofits. There's, of course, much more in this $14.5 billion budget to fund state agency operations, but those were some of the big ones. Now, the governor has up until midnight on July 3rd to issue his line item vetoes, and that's typically for projects and initiatives that he deems not worthy of the taxpayer dollar. He's not slashing entire agency budgets here. Now, once those are issued, the new budget will take effect, but there is a continuing resolution in place for the first few days of the fiscal year for agencies to operate under the previous year's budget. But, you know, it's just a couple days the first year, and there's a budget in place, so no one's worried. Sticking with the State House, there were some somber goodbyes following the primaries and runoffs. You heard a bit in Russ's piece from Lexington Democratic Senator Nikki Setzler in his speech, as well as Lexington Republican Senator Katrina Sheely, who lost her runoff on Tuesday by 25 points. And we're going to start there with some of Sheely's emotional remarks after her loss. She, along with the two other Republican sister senators, lost their seats over their votes to prevent a near total abortion ban bill getting through the chamber, a move that earned them the prestigious John F. Kennedy Profile in Courage Award, which you'll hear about in this clip.
I've read billboards that said I was a baby killer. I would never hurt a child. I have saved more children since I have been in the South Carolina legislature than probably anybody else I know. I have taken children out of foster homes, out of group homes, and I have literally saved their lives from being beaten to death with a window blind. I have saved children's lives. And to watch what personhood South Carolina has done to me is just cruel and unheard of. And I hope the lobbyists for those groups are happy with themselves, because my grandchildren aren't embarrassed because of me. My grandchildren stood last night and said, "Thank God I get my meemaw back." And you know, I see that the people that should be most ashamed got up and left the room because they are ashamed of what they've done. The one thing I did was I was looking out for women. I was looking out for girls and, you know, the future of South Carolina. And we weren't allowed to bring our Profile in Courage Award into the chamber because it's too controversial. We weren't allowed to put it in the antechamber because it's too controversial. We weren't allowed to put it in the state house because it was too controversial. Well, let me tell you how expensive it is before I put on these white gloves. It's $36,000 worth of white gloves that I'm putting on to pick up. But here it is. And it's beautiful, and I'm proud of it, and I am proud of losing this Senate race just to get this, because I stood up for the right thing. I stood up for women. I stood up for children. I stood up for South Carolina. And all of these sister senators here with me, we're not ashamed to be called sister senators. We're not ashamed of anything we did.
Also saying goodbye is Columbia Democratic Senator Dick Harpulian, who lost his primary to State Representative Russell Ott in the newly redrawn Senate District 26. Harpulian took the well after Shealy, and in an incredibly rare moment, the bombastic trial lawyer displayed emotion speaking about Shealy's loss, which means there will be no Republican women in the Senate.
So unlike Senator Shealy, my opponent didn't have to lie to beat me. He outworked me, and to be frank with you, he had a strategy that was superior to mine. I'd like to say he lied about me. I'd like to blame it on something other than the truth. But the fact of the matter is, I wasn't up to the task. I'm a trial lawyer. I've tried cases for 50 years. I win some, I lose some. And I am someone who doesn't bemoan the fact I lost. Now, I do bemoan the fact that she lost. I think there are people like Katrina, who live what they say, what they believe. I'm not necessarily one of those people. On occasion, I rise to meet that, but she does it every day. I won't be here, but if I were here, I would miss her, because she is the conscience of this body. And she lost because she voted her conscience. Many of us here vote what we believe to be the politically convenient position. The facts are Biden won, Trump lost. And anyone watching this that thinks that that didn't happen, you know, I think over in the House they put on aluminum foil hats. You are entitled to your opinion. What you're not entitled, your own opinion, what you're not entitled to is your own facts. And the problem with this is, I wouldn't care if you didn't think that we landed on the moon. I wouldn't care if you think that aliens are occupying, you know, the White House. I don't care about that. What I do care about is when you have an opinion that sheds and shades your belief and everyone else's belief in the electoral process, you threaten our democracy. Our democracy. And that's what's going on. If I met one, I met 15 that told me they believed it. Their facts were based on some wacko pillow salesman who posted something on the internet or was interviewed on some right wing. It's not really right wing. They call themselves conservatives. They're not conservatives. Conservatives believe in the Constitution. Conservatives believe in the validity and the sanctity of the electoral process. That's one problem I got. So, I've offended everybody here today, a goal I have had for 6 years. Lately, I have taken to listening to Johnny Cash. But Johnny Cash did a cover of a Trent Reznor. You know who that is, but most of these folks. Trent Reznor is a guy with a lead singer for a group called Nine Inch Nails, which is not, Senator from Peeler, a Motown group. Let's put it that way. I was listening to Johnny Cash the other morning, and he was singing this song, and it sort of exemplifies how I feel leaving here, and I'm going to read these lyrics to you, and that'll be the end of this, and me. The last time I will appear in this body at this podium. It's bittersweet, a little more sweet than bitter, but at the same time, I want you to understand how I feel about it. The name of this song, by the way, is Hurt. What have I become, my sweetest friend? Everyone I know goes away in the end. And you can have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down. I will make you hurt. Thank you.
And here is a recap of the primary runoff elections that took place on Tuesday. Bear with me. AT doesn't like the look of it. Hopefully you like the sound of it, folks. Let's start in the 3rd Congressional District, where Sherry Biggs beat Mark Burns by 1,100 votes to become the Republican nominee for the ultra-conservative upstate district, making her essentially the next congresswoman come November when she faces Democrat Brian Best. You might remember that Biggs was endorsed by Governor Henry McMaster and Burns was endorsed by former President Donald Trump. Awkward. Now, with Biggs' win, Governor McMaster went 3 for 3 on his congressional endorsements.
3.
He also endorsed William Timmons in the 4th and Nancy Mace in the 1st. Greenville Representative Jason Elliott won the open Senate District 6 seat that Republican Senator Dwight Loftus is vacating. There is no Democratic opponent. Congratulations to Senator-elect Elliott. Spartanburg Republican Representative Roger Nutt defeated former State Senator Lee Bright for the District 12 race, and he faces Octavia Amici in the general. District 10 Greenwood Republican Senator Billy Garrett staved off a challenge and will face Democrat Francie Cuckley in November for the Republican district. Angela Getter won the Democratic District 10 runoff and will face Spartanburg Republican Senator Josh Kimbrell in that Republican district. Richland County Councilman Overture Walker defeated State Representative Ivory Thigpen for the District 22 Democratic nomination and faces Republican Lee Blatt. Carlisle Kennedy defeated Senator Katrina Sheely for District 26, like we said. Jeffrey Graham won the Democratic nomination for retiring Sumter Democratic Senator Thomas McElveen's District 35 seat. Graham will face Republican Mike Jones, who also won on Tuesday as well. Republican Blake Sanders won his runoff for retiring Anderson Representative Ann Thayer's District 9 seat in the House. Sarita Edgerton won the Republican nomination for Nutt's District 34 seat. And former State Representative Jerry Govan won the District 93 Democratic nomination for Russell Ott's old House seat. So there you go, folks. A little bit of a recap, a little bit of a scene setter for November. But now let's go across the pond.
Okay, let's go.
The governor was in Europe, bienvenue, this week as part of an economic development visit to the continent, specifically Germany, Guten Tag, our state's top export market. Ever heard of BMW?
Yes.
Yeah, South Carolina makes more ultimate driving machines than even the Bavarians. It's kind of awkward. Mein Gott. In fact, completed passenger vehicles are our top export, followed by aircraft and parts. I don't know about this past year, though. Kind of a rough year for Boeing. Now, speaking of German partners, we just saw Elring Klinger, an automotive supplier, announce that it selected Pickens County to establish its first South Carolina operation. Willkommen, Elring Klinger. The $40.3 million investment will create 115 new jobs. Elring Klinger will manufacture electric battery cell contacting systems come mid-2025. So we're all talking about the EVs, electric vehicles, and all the suppliers and manufacturers that are now in our state. And that's something I talked about with South Carolina Commerce Secretary Harry Lightsey on a recent episode of This Week in South Carolina. Here is part of my chat with Lightsey, in which I start off by asking him about the latest on the revolutionary $2 billion investment by Volkswagen-owned Scout Motors and their massive electric vehicle plant being built in Blythewood.
Well, it's going very fast and very well. The site is really progressing. You know, it is an amazing feat that's going on out there. As it's really the largest earth-moving project in the southeastern United States right now. So literally, you know, hundreds of thousands of cubic feet of dirt are being moved daily out there. And as we get that site level and ready to be utilized by Scout, and they have started putting up the structural steel for their first buildings, and they're moving along. So everything is on schedule. We are continuing to deal with the issues just the size and scope of the project presents, and hopefully get all the right resources there to move that project forward on schedule.
Mm-hmm. And that should be by the end of next year, and we're talking about, what, 4,000 new jobs for that just alone?
That's right. Wow. So 4,000 for that just alone. It's clearly incredibly impactful to the whole Midlands area. Mm-hmm.
So, Secretary, there was about $1.3 billion incentives package approved by the state to get that manufactured to the state. We've talked about this before. A lot of people have heartburn about when it comes to incentive packages. But do we have to continue using these taxpayer dollars to lure big companies, or is that just the nature of business these days?
Well, that is the way that economic development works. And in order to be competitive with 50 other states and hundreds of foreign countries, they all offer economic development incentives. And so in order to be competitive, that's part of the table stakes. We try to be very competitive. We try to be very judicious in the use of the taxpayers' money. We're very conscious about the fact that we're using taxpayer dollars with these incentives. In South Carolina, the way we use our incentives is that all those monies are going into infrastructure in the state or into the site itself so that the company really gets to take advantage of that investment, but the state does as well. So if the company leaves, that investment is still there for the citizens in that area or for another company to come along and utilize that investment. So the investment stays with the state, and that's very important.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we could be doing more to incentivize smaller businesses too? I mean, is there a way to do that? Or is it when it comes to incentives, is that just for larger projects?
So right now, the way the incentive structure works, it clearly is geared towards larger projects, larger manufacturing projects. Mm-hmm. But we are very cognizant of what's going on in the world in terms of new developing sectors. So life sciences, for example, is one of our new target sectors that we're really working to develop in South Carolina. Advanced energy is another one. And in those areas, those technologies are so brand new and developing so quickly, a lot of the companies that are bringing these new technologies to the market are not that big. Mm-hmm. And they're really moving out of research and development into commercialization. And so we've begun discussing with our legislative policymakers the need to reflect that in our incentive structure so that we can provide incentives to smaller companies that don't really fit for our typical manufacturing classifications that we have today.
That was SC Department of Commerce Secretary Harry Lightsey. Now for the part of the pod you've all been waiting for, the recap of the first presidential debate. Actually, I'm not going to recap much of it, but yes, you've probably already been bombarded with clips, hot takes, and everything else. Now, we are not a national news podcast. There are plenty of those out there. You come to us for relevant state news that cuts through all of that noise on the national level. If you want some great national pods, here are some that I listen to. Try Politico Playbook and Politico Deep Dive. There's the NPR Politics podcast we love. There's the Wall Street Journal's What's News. I love all things Wall Street Journal. Read it every day. And there's always the New York Times' The Daily with Michael Barbaro. And my go-to international news pod is the BBC Global News Podcast. Now, that being said, here were some of the headlines from major news outlets following that 90-minute debate Thursday night between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump in Atlanta. The New York Times: Biden struggles as Trump blusters in contentious debate. The Washington Post: Biden struggles, Trump deflects questions. The Wall Street Journal: Biden crashed in first clash with Trump. Politico: Biden is toast. Axios: Biden blunders dominate combative debate with Trump. Kind of a long one there, Axios. No, you get the gist, right? It's the gist. I just gave it to you. How can you not get the gist? Everyone gets the gist. I'm not going to give you any recap. Instead, I will direct you to PolitiFact, which is run by the Poynter Institute, which is basically the gold standard of journalism. You can read that fact check. You can read ones by the Associated Press and other credible news outlets. I would say watch the debate, but I think you're better off just reading the fact checks, folks. I did want to give you just one example from the debate, and that was when CNN's Dana Bash asked this question about both of their ages. Remember, Biden is 81 years old and Trump is 78.
Let's turn to concerns that voters have about each of you. President Biden, you would be 86 at the end of your second term. How do you address concerns about your capability to handle the toughest job in the world well into your 80s?
Well, first of all, I spent half my career being criticized being the youngest person in politics. I was the second youngest person ever elected to the United States Senate, and now I'm the oldest. This guy's 3 years younger and a lot less competent. I think that just look at the record. Look at what I've done. Look how I've turned around the horrible situation he left me. As I said, 15 million new jobs, 800,000 manufacturing jobs, more investment in America, over billions of dollars in private investment in enterprises that we are growing. By the way, we brought an awful lot of people. The whole idea of computer chips, we used to have 40% of the market. We invented those chips, and we lost it because he was sending people to find the cheapest jobs overseas and to bring home a product. So I went to South Korea. I convinced Samsung to invest billions of dollars here in the United States. And guess what? Those fabs, they call them, to build these chips, those fabs pay over $100,000. You don't need a college degree for them. And there's billions, about $40 billion already being invested and being built right now in the United States, creating significant jobs for Americans from all over the world.
President Biden, you have 40 seconds left. Would you like to add anything?
Yeah, I would. The idea that somehow we are this failing country. I never heard a president talk like this before. We're the envy of the world. Like, name me a single major country president who wouldn't trade places with the United States of America for all our problems and all our opportunities. We're the most progressive country in the world in getting things done. We're the strongest country in the world. We're a country in the world who keeps our word, and everybody trusts us, all of our allies, and those who he coddles up to, from Kim Jong-un, who he sends love letters to, and Putin, et cetera. They don't want to screw around with us.
Thank you. Former President Trump, to follow up, you would be 82 at the end of your second term. What do you say to voters who have concerns about your capabilities to serve?
Well, I took two tests, cognitive tests. I aced them, both of them, as you know. We made it public. He took none. I'd like to see him take one, just one, a real easy one. Like, go through the first five questions. He couldn't do it. But I took two cognitive tests. I took physical exams every year. And, you know, we knock on wood wherever we may have wood, that I'm in very good health. I just won two club championships, not even senior, two regular club championships. To do that, you have to be quite smart, and you have to be able to hit the ball a long way. And I do it. He doesn't do it. He can't hit a ball 50 yards. He challenged me to a golf match. He can't hit a ball 50 yards. I think I'm in very good shape. I feel that I'm as in good a shape as I was 25, 30 years ago. Actually, I'm probably a little bit lighter, but I'm in as good a shape as I was years ago. I feel very good. I feel the same. But I was willing to take a cognitive test. And you know what? If I didn't do well, I aced them. Dr. Ronny Jackson, who's a great guy, when he was White House doctor. And then I took another one, a similar one. And both, one of them said they've never seen anybody ace him.
Thank you. President Biden?
You can see he is 6'5" and only 223 pounds, or 235 pounds. Well, you said 6'4", 200. Well, anyway, that's what you're... Anyway, just take a look at what he says he is and take a look at what he is. Look, I'd be happy to have a driving contest with him. I got my handicap, which when I was vice president, down to a 6. But by the way, I told you before, I'm happy to play golf with you if you carry your own bag. Think you can do it?
That's the biggest lie, that he's a 6 handicap of all.
I was an 8 handicap.
Yeah.
8...
Never.
But I have, you know how many? I've
seen you swing. I know you swing.
Okay, let's not act like children. President Trump, we're going to turn.
Let's not act like children.
And a note, Trump was asked 3 times whether he would accept the outcome of the election, quote, regardless of who wins. And he finally answered, quote, if it is a fair and legal and good election, absolutely, quote. We should also note that the 2020 election was fair and legal, and he still has not accepted those results. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. It's a small, little, tiny, minuscule break from the news, but it seems to seep in, doesn't it? A.T. Shire producer Lee Buckles.
Oh, it absolutely, the seepening is happening.
Seepage.
It's
that's a gross word.
I really do feel that more than any other day. Right now, we all need a little break from the news.
Little break from the news.
It really feels like my brain seeped out of my body during the debate. I couldn't stomach it.
I watched it all.
Gavin watched it all. I watched 28 seconds. Personally, I couldn't do it. I had to avert my gaze.
But you were mainlining the Twitter.
The Twitter was good. That's where I wanted. I need it. I need it filtered through the lens of pure irony.
The keyboard warriors out there.
It's just... Anyway, Gavin, that's enough of that. The absolute dreck of the news infecting every aspect of everyone's life. So here we go, Gavin. We got a call. Great old friend. Great old pal. I love them very much. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
Hey, Gavin and AT. This is Cam calling hands-free driving around in Columbia. Basement boy number two represents. Been too long, so I figured I'd drop you guys a line. Phrases that I hate or can't stand. You guys covered so many good ones. I don't even know that I hate this phrase, but I had a guitar teacher. My guitar program teacher from my high school would finish almost every explanatory statement with, "Do you see what I'm saying?" But he didn't have a speech impediment, but for some reason, when he would say it really quickly, it would always come out, "Do you see what I'm saying?" Sometimes, "Do you see what I'm saying?" And so hearing that over and over and over for years and pointing out to my fellow classmates, if he starts talking quick, it's going to be, "You see what I'm saying?" was always highly entertaining. And that phrase can never be divorced from that person in my mind. Yeah, it's one that I try and avoid using myself, just to, reserve it hanging in the rafters for that guitar teacher who I will not dox here, even though he lives in Virginia. Hope you guys are doing well. Stay cool out there. I'm currently melting while I have the AC down to give you guys this call. So have a good one.
Hands-free Cam, thank you for calling. It has been a minute, and I need to come to Transmission, his bar here in Columbia on Main Street.
Absolutely.
Hit it up
killer.
If you want a great spot, folks.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I'm talking about, Cam.
See what I'm saying.
You can't retain knowledge at that point if someone is saying that over and over again.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? I don't see what you're saying.
I get it. I can't see anything besides you saying that. Yeah.
That's triggering. We were just talking about words that are gross, but I also have some favorite words. Seepage. Yep. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, that's what we were saying.
A word that I do like, but that's always tricky for me to say is wanton.
Wanton. Wanton violence.
You're just triggered to say wanton. Right?
Wanton.
It says wanton. When I say wane, I'm always wan. It's horrible for me.
Like waning and ebbing waning. Okay.
But wanton disregard.
Yeah.
Love that phrase.
A wanton disregard for human life. I'm pretty sure that
Ooh,
is...
Could that be a band name for
I'm
me?
Pretty sure wanton that's a disregard. Lyric from a Biohazard song. I'm pretty sure.
Wanton disregard.
Yeah, yeah.
Now definitely. On the stage.
Wanton disregard. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a bunch of English teachers.
Yeah, it's just a vocab lesson. Cam, thank you for calling.
Cam was talking about turning on the AC. It was hot this week.
AC was broken. It got fixed this morning.
I've heard of so many people with broken ACs. Brutal out there.
I am $3,000 poorer. This is the voice of a poor man.
That's what the pledge drive we did on Wednesday was for. Just an AT AC fund.
It's been a lot, folks. I come into work for the AC.
My house doesn't get too hot. I got some good tree coverage, so I kind of kill the AC during the day. It doesn't get above 78. And it's not even hot when I come home to 78.
Inside.
It's not. It's still very cool. I'm okay. But you can't just let your AC run it's not going to get lower than like 75 exactly. inside my house. So there's no point in hurting my precious baby.
When they came and told me that the AC was broken.
They.
And
Big AC. Big AC coming in.
And they were like, okay.
Listen up, schmuck.
If you leave it on too long, it's going to die. Okay.
Yeah.
But then also they say, if you turn it down too drastic, too big.
Yeah.
It's going to die.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what's a sweaty, hot, sweaty boy to do? You know, like
live in the basement, AT. Be glad you have a basement.
God, the basement. Yeah. At least it stays at a balmy 74 down there, no matter what you do. God, like the cats. But speaking like what you're saying, the 78 inside with it being so hot outside, my dad, my parents, they did just move down.
Yay.
And,
gotta get your father on the podcast.
He has to be on the podcast. The drastic difference between the brutal outside and like a 76 inside, like in New Jersey,
yeah.
he would never abide by a 76.
Sure.
But here he's like, oh, this is nice. Yeah. This is not so say, what's bad.
How are they feeling coming to the devil's armpit that is Columbia?
They moved down during that heat snap that we just had. And so I mean, and just in time for what, the hottest 100 days of the year. This is tear the Band-Aid off type stuff, you know? Like,
that's a good way to come into it. Like, you know,
let's get this over with. It's going to be hot through that first home game of the year for football, where if you're on the sun side of the stadium,
oh my God,
it's just like you're on the heat stroke side.
Yeah.
You know, like, I hope you weren't drinking before this football game because you're going to be dehydrated.
Spray yourself in sunscreen.
It's going to be
so
bad.
Okay, there's no shame in drinking water while you're tailgating, folks.
Water.
Just don't let anyone see you do it.
Ugh.
That's a pro tip right there.
Yeah.
I chug water behind the car so no one sees me. Oh, I've been like this all day. I'm perfect. Like, or you're like, you're in the bathroom, you're just cupping water to the mouth. Like,
yeah, and then with the press hand washers at the urinals, drinking out of it.
No, I'm not doing it in a public restroom. I'm doing it in someone's home or possibly a trailer.
Cockaboose.
perhaps a cockaboose?
Even. Anyway, Gavin, I feel like
I just want to go ahead and say, since I'm not going to be here next week, because,
yes.
you know, I observe our nation's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
I always take a week off because my birthday comes up on July 8th.
It's right there.
Feel free to send birthday wishes. 38 is going to be looking pretty good, I can already tell you.
38 and flirty-8, you know what I mean?
Meanwhile, how old's America turned? 249? Right? We're getting up on 250?
We're closing in on 250. Yeah, America 250.
She's looking a little rough at 249.
God.
How old is America?
The seeping is coming in. So before we seep too much, please do the outro, Gavin. Please, put us out of our misery. Oh, I do want to say, people, the secret show that's airing, it's not really a secret show. It's a new fun quiz show that I've been working pretty hard on. So please listen. Please enjoy. It's going to be called Who, What, When.
It's going to be in your lead feed.
You're going to love it.
You're going to love it. You're going to love the way you look.
Anyway, Gavin, put us out of our misery. The caboose is reaching the
loose.
Station. It's reaching the station. Please land this train. You know what I mean?
Just land the train.
Get off my train. Here we go.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you, as always, for listening, dear listener. Give us a shout. Be like Hands-Free Cam. I'm going to call you that from now on, Cam HFC. And you can be featured in the wind-down, possibly. 803-563-7169. Or you can show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. South Carolina Lead, it's Gavin. Hey, I love this. We're both so enthused. What's the difference? Nothing matters.
It's the malaise.